Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
And joining us now is the author of the book Hamburger Dreams, which you can check out at hamburgerdreams.com. Our guest, Chris Carosa, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I love the name Hamburger Dreams, much better than Caviar Dreams with the old Robin Leach stuff. Love hamburgers. What's your interest, your background in hamburgers?
I eat a lot of them. That makes me just like everybody else. I wrote a book several years ago about the 50 hidden gems of greater Western New York. And in there was a hamburger origin story, one of four across the country. And as I talked about that book, it turned out that the audiences really wanted to know more about the origin of the hamburger, which one was true, which of the four stories were true. And nobody really explored that idea, so I decided, what the heck, give it a shot. I mean, there was some exploration by the former food critic for the New York Times involving one of the stories that actually also involves St. Louis. Hmm. But as far as the other ones, there was really no deep dive into the veracity of those stories.
What story involves St. Louis?
Well, perhaps one of the most famous hamburger origin stories was that the hamburger was invented at the World's Fair in St. Louis in 1904, mm-hmm. somewhere on the Midway, or the Pike, as they called it.
Now, is that contested, the origin story of the burger?
That particular one, the St. Louis story, is pretty much, everyone agrees it's not really true. And in fact, what I did in my book, if you look at the subtitle of the book, is How Classic Crime-Solving Techniques were Used to Solve America's Greatest Culinary Mystery. Mm-hmm. And if you think about this, the hamburger origin stories occur in the late 19th century, starting from 1885 through 1900, 1904, right around the same time when Sherlock Holmes arrived on the scene. And one of Sherlock Holmes' most famous techniques was to eliminate the impossible. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did in the beginning. I took all four stories, plotted them on a timeline when they occurred, the latest one being the St. Louis story in 1904, and then went back to old newspaper archives and tried to find the earliest mention of the word hamburger as in a hamburger sandwich. Mm-hmm. They called it different things. They called it a hamburger sandwich. All those things occurred. So I looked for all the earliest mentions I could find that definitively describe what we today would call a hamburger.
Wow. Were you obsessed with it? Did you end up staying up late nights? You know, you have like, you're sitting in an office and they're all up on the wall and there's push pins and red yarn, things like that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you could talk to my wife about that.
But the obsession, yeah.
You know, I mean, and you think about Sherlock Holmes tends to be obsessed about solving the crimes he has to solve. Certainly, there were a lot of rabbit holes that I went down.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun. It was a new exploration, not just for me, but I don't know how many other people might have gone down these rabbit holes. And the great thing about it is I get to share it all now in this book.
Yeah.
And you can go down those rabbit holes too, because I've left the little footprints for you to follow. I've given you more than 300 footnotes.
Oh.
That you can see. You can go to the original sources and see what they said.
You know, are there hamburger conspiracy theories too?
That's a good question. I never thought about that. I guess I'm trying to think. Not really. I mean, there's a lot of neat things. I mean, I'll tell you one of the neat things was the St. Louis story.
Yeah.
And I devote an entire chapter to this. Since it's now, you know, so apparent that it didn't happen in 1904.
Mm-hmm.
The earliest story that I found that talked about hamburgers was from 1894.
Okay.
There was no possible way it wasn't talking about hamburgers. It described how you cook the hamburgers, how you flip the hamburgers, how you put them in the bread.
Sure.
I mean, it was a street vendor, what they were talking about, a food court, a food cart. But the St. Louis story really had a lot of legs, and in part because there was a little competition between the New Haven story and the Athens, Texas story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Athens, Texas story is related. It's part of the St. Louis story. And this occurred in the 1970s. It involved not only these two cities, but also the New York Times got involved. There was a story in the New York Times, unfortunately not sourced, so I wasn't able to tell where they got their information from, but I was able to track down as much of it as possible because it talked about McDonald's and Hamburger University.
Mm-hmm.
And it mentioned this newspaper article from the New York Tribune. Supposedly there was a New York Tribune article that came out in 1904 that talked about this guy from Athens, Texas, who went to the World's Fair and invented the hamburger.
Hmm.
That was reported in the early 1970s.
Yeah.
And I looked back over the years, and over the years, most of the newspaper stories talked about St. Louis as being the place where the hamburger was invented. You know, newspapers would have a little extra space in them. They'd fill them out with a factoid. Well, lots of times you'll say, in 1904, the hamburger was invented at the St. Louis World's Fair. You know, something like that. So I went back in time and just traced back every mention of this story and found out where I think it began.
Mm-hmm.
And where it began was from a newspaper called the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah. And it could be popularized, perhaps, in St. Louis. I mean, that could have helped propel hamburgers.
That is what a lot of people say, is that maybe what the St. Louis World's Fair did was really push the hamburgers out. But hamburgers were pretty popular before that.
Yeah.
There were newspaper articles that talk about it. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, there's a lot of food history involving the St. Louis World's Fair.
Oh, yeah.
And Pam Vaccaro, who's a food historian there, who was kind enough to write a little thing about my book for the book, she has an excellent book that talks all about these foods. One of the things that I found out, this is actually going to be of interest to St. Louis people if they don't know it already, there was actually a food that was invented at the time precisely for the World's Fair.
Hmm.
And it was cotton candy.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard that. There's a couple of different ones. And, like, I guess Dr. Pepper was popularized here. It was around, but it wasn't really known outside of certain areas until the World's Fair. And you hear these things, like these culinary treats. And the World's Fair is a great opportunity to debut these things because the visitors were... Oh, so many visitors. There's a great exhibit right now at the Missouri History Museum about the World's Fair with some exhibits and things. Next time I go through there, I'm going to go through and look at as many photos as I can and see if I can find a hamburger in there somewhere. Talking Burgers with Chris Carosa, author of Hamburger Dreams. It's fun to see the ties to St. Louis as part of his research there. We're going to continue our conversation next and talk more history on Overnight America, KMOX. Here we are. Overnight America continues. I wanted to read this real quick before we continue our interview on Hamburger Dreams. Sounds like a great movie title or a documentary. National Weather Service in St. Louis issuing a severe thunderstorm warning for northwestern Jefferson County, east central Franklin County, and southwestern St. Louis County until 1 a.m. So that's a severe thunderstorm warning until 1 a.m. for northwestern Jefferson, east central Franklin, and southwestern St. Louis County. They say severe thunderstorm located near Pacific, moving about 40 miles an hour east, 60 mile an hour gust of winds, and even some hail being reported there. Wow. So we'll keep an eye on that until, well, another 40 minutes from now when it's set to expire, if it does. And of course, if anything changes, we will let you know. Welcome back to Overnight America. I love food. Love talking food, too. The book is called Hamburger Dreams. The website, hamburgerdreams.com. You can find out more from author Chris Carosa, who joins us here. We're talking about the history of burgers here in St. Louis, popularizing perhaps at the World's Fair in 1904.
Well, there's a lot of foods that were popularized in that fair.
Yeah.
They weren't necessarily invented there, but they really got launched that way. Same thing with the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago.
Yeah.
So those two World's Fairs really were maybe what I'd call the food fairs.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of the stuff that came out of them.
National Hamburger Day is coming up soon, May 28th. What do you do to celebrate it?
Well, hopefully I'll be on a lot of radio shows like this telling people about the origin of the hamburger.
Yeah.
And then maybe having a burger with my family on the grill.
Yeah, so Hamburger Dreams is the book, the website, hamburgerdreams.com. Now, are there any recipes in this thing?
No, there are no recipes. This is not a cookbook. I mean, that's a question everybody asks. They want to know. And in fact, I'm thinking, should I put recipes on the website? You know, that's, a lot of people already do that. So what I think I'll do on the website is I'll probably link to other websites that do have burger recipes because for some people think, you know, yesterday I was at a contest, Best Burger in New York, and we had to judge all these burgers, and people were asking me about, you know, making hamburgers. Like, my mother is a home economist. Mm. I am not a cook. I am just an eater and a researcher.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
I'm limited in that way.
The burger has evolved a lot over the years from what even we see now. It seems like everyone wants to get into the gourmet burger game. They want to do certain things, and I think people are attracted to that, too. They like a big old burger with a bunch of stuff on it, and there's even some, you know, very popular chains, the In-N-Outs of the world and places like that, that people will flock to just because they want to try certain things. So the evolution of the burger, you've probably seen a lot of different versions of it over the years through your research.
Oh, yes, definitely. In fact, one of the stories, the New Haven story, I call it, it's a pretty much a naked hamburger. Literally, they say you can't put ketchup on it. If you put ketchup on it, it's not a hamburger. Now, obviously, people now don't put ketchup on it. But when they first started making it, they were pretty strict that way. The one interesting thing, another interesting thing I found out was the cheeseburger. So the cheeseburger was supposedly invented in Southern California, I think in the 1920s. And the name cheeseburger may have been invented at that point. But certainly putting cheese on hamburgers date back to at least 1894. I have a newspaper article that talks about putting cheese on hamburgers as a choice.
Yeah, that's interesting. To me, it's so common. You would think these things would just have happened immediately. Like, oh yeah, let's put some cheese on that. But it does take time for someone to give it a try at first.
Well, you know, that's a good point because it also kind of reflects on the whole idea. There's no smoking gun. There's no newspaper article that came out the day the hamburger was invented saying, oh, look here, we just invented the hamburger, because nobody thought it was a big deal. I mean, it was really more of a, in three of the four stories, it was a mother of invention, a mother of necessity type of invention. They just had to make the hamburger because they needed something quick. They didn't have anything else. They had some ground beef around, put it together, put it on some bread, and then sent it out.
Yeah, maybe I don't spend enough time in New York. Are there a lot of street vendors selling hamburgers?
No, not really. In New York City, there's a lot of street vendors that are selling hot dogs.
Yeah.
Although they're trying to eliminate them for some reason.
Oh. Well, that's the thing. You mentioned that you can trace this back to a street vendor putting this together. And I don't think I've ever seen a burger sold on the street. It's all, like, there's food trucks for sure, or there's different local restaurants or things that are right off of the main street. But I don't think I've ever seen someone trying to peddle a burger.
Yeah, today no. But back in the old days, in the 1800s, the idea of a lunch wagon, a lunch cart, well, we'll call them a food truck now, but these lunch carts were very popular, and that's where they sold food, not only for the workers that worked in the factories, but also, if you remember, after the Civil War, there was a lot of this outdoor entertainment, whether it be carnivals or county fairs or eventually baseball games, and they needed food concessions there. And two of these stories, the earliest stories from 1885, both occur in county fairs.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, I lived in Ohio for a while, and one of the regionally popular places in Lima was called Kewpie. And I guess they used to be pretty large, but part of the folklore with Kewpie is that during the war, they were rationing beef, and they had to close a lot of their franchisees, and there's really none left. There's just maybe a couple left in Lima. There's one in, like, Wisconsin, and that's it. Did you see that maybe during times of war, hamburgers started to go on the decline because of something like that?
That's interesting. I didn't see that, but what I did see is during World War One, there was some question of whether or not they should be called hamburgers because of Hamburg, Germany. Hmm. There was a movement to kind of change the name, but it didn't really stick. And in fact, hamburgers, as we know hamburgers, are not named after Hamburg, Germany.
Hmm.
McDonald's, at one point in 1964, McDonald's sent a vice president to the mayor of Hamburg, Germany, to give him some sort of certificate saying, hey, thank you for inventing the hamburger. And the mayor said, what? I have no idea what you're talking about. And this was reported all over the country in newspapers, which was actually part of the McDonald's PR strategy.
Yeah.
They just would pull these kind of stunts, and they didn't care if they were true or not because they just wanted the name McDonald's to be in the newspapers all over the place.
I get it. All right, so the website, very easy, hamburgerdreams.com. People can find information on the book right there.
They can go there. They can go to their bookstore or any online book site. Look it up, Hamburger Dreams.
When you go to a small diner, some go heavy on the onions. Do you like that smell when you walk in, you get that heavy onion smell, and you're about to get a burger from there?
So here's what I like. I like uncooked onions. As opposed to fried or cooked onions. So I'll go in there and I'll insist because they'll say, do you want onions on your hamburger or not? And I'll say, yeah, but make it be uncooked.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And then I get the real taste. To me, oh, I'm just salivating now telling you this story. It's just I love the taste of onion in hamburgers.
Yeah, that's it. I've never thought of that outside of, normally when you make it at your house, you go to the barbecue grill, you know, you just put the onions on if you chop some up. You don't normally cook the onions. I normally always think of it as something that's cooked at a restaurant. Well, that's a good option. See, these are like hamburger hacks where you can learn new things. So hamburgerdreams.com is the book, and Chris Carosa, author of it, How Classic Crime-Solving Techniques Help Crack the Case of America's Greatest Culinary Mystery. Great references to St. Louis in there. Chris, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm watching the storms that are rolling through here and some of the radars and whatnot. This really picked up. Before, it didn't look like there was much of anything that was rolling through. Then all of a sudden, these storms are, it's a weird progression. They're going almost southeast as opposed to, northeast. They're going southeast, so it's coming down. And with these storms, I'm looking out the window. It doesn't really look like it's storming in downtown St. Louis. I mean, the ground looks a little wet, like there might have been a little rain, but not really. So here's what we're seeing. The National Weather Service in St. Louis issuing a severe thunderstorm warning for northwestern Jefferson County, east central Franklin County, and southwestern St. Louis County until 1 a.m., so about another 33 minutes from now. We're going to be joined right after the weather and the break here with AccuWeather, and we'll get the very latest from them, and hopefully we'll be able to check things out and see if we're going to get more of this through the overnight, if it's just going to get one and done, just find its way out of here. Hopefully that's the case on KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Some severe weather moving through our area. A severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect until 1 a.m. for northwestern Jefferson, east central Franklin, and southwestern St. Louis counties. From AccuWeather, because they are live and local just like we are. Carl Babinski, thanks for coming on.
Oh, no problem.
It's so nice that we have the ability to talk to you. And I'm looking at the radar, and you know what kind of grabbed me by surprise? 60-mile-an-hour gust of wind. National Weather Service puts this little disclaimer in there. This is enough to dent your car. When they talk about the hail that could be seen in some areas. Wow.
Yeah, and, the echoes or the radar, the components we're seeing on radar, these showers and heavier thunderstorms, they are scattered in nature. It's not like we're seeing one of those massive bow echoes moving through. Some areas are getting hit pretty hard right now. Others are not. So it is a sort of hit or miss nature, but those places getting hit are getting hit pretty hard. And as you mentioned, not only 60-mile-per-hour wind gusts are possible here within the next 20 or 30 minutes, but also some fairly large hail.
Yeah, and when I look at the radar, I'm just kind of watching it cycle. So around High Ridge right now, it's heading towards Arnold. So it's a little bit south of what you'd consider the metropolitan area of St. Louis, and it continues to track down that way. Is that storm that's going through, it looks like there's another cell almost right behind it. Is there a chance that the St. Louis metropolitan area gets a storm tonight?
Well, a very good question. Whenever thunderstorms do occur, they create what's called outflow. Basically, the strong wind gusts, the downdrafts, and heavy rain cause small fronts, if you will. I mean, when you look at television and you see the national maps that have these big warm fronts and cold fronts on them, remember that on a much, much smaller scale, thunderstorms create their own environment with mesofronts. And so along the outflow boundary, yeah, I believe Metro St. Louis, there will probably be another cell or two popping up. Now, everything is drifting to the southeast at around 40 miles per hour because winds aloft are out of the northwest. So they're being, they're being shunted or being pushed from northwest to southeast. But because of that thing I described, the mesofronts or the outflow creating new thunderstorm cells, I think we will see a few more of these erupting here over the next few hours.
Now, if you ever create a band full of meteorologists, the mesofronts would be an excellent name for it. I would consider that, Carl. So with this, these 60-mile-an-hour gust of wind, I tried to go online, and some of these different maps will show if there's been anything close to that. I haven't seen a lot of high winds in these areas coming through. So is it just the hail that primarily is the problem with the storms that are coming through south of the city now?
Yeah, well, I think the wind effects, as you pointed out, you don't see a lot of reporting stations showing that. Those effects can be quite local. Wouldn't rule out wind gusts of up to 60 miles per hour, even though they may not be widespread. And yes, hail, that I think is the big threat here, as that special statement, that warning that the Weather Service put out at about a quarter after midnight, they were talking about quarter-sized hail. So certainly that does... So something you don't want to see, and force to be reckoned with. So not only could the wind cause some roof damage and down trees, but the hail could also lead to some roof damage.
Yeah. So severe thunderstorm warning in effect until 1 a.m. for northwestern Jefferson, east central Franklin, and southwestern St. Louis counties. And meteorologist Carl Babinski from AccuWeather joining us. And while I got you, mm-hmm. this weekend we're going to get some nice weather in the 80s, and finally we'll see a couple of days in a row with sun, which is something we're not used to lately here in St. Louis. So is it going to get more normal when it comes to our temperatures in St. Louis by next week, or are we going to see more of this up and down stuff?
I believe that we are headed to a warmer place, and we're going to stay there. Basically, the transformation you're talking about, the warm surge, it's going to be long-lasting. For example, beginning Thursday, we're expecting highs in the mid-80s, and I think that's a trend that will carry us right into the weekend and beyond. Now, to go along with that, the Storm Prediction Center, the National Severe Storms Forecasting Laboratory in Norman, Oklahoma, they have been using severe weather guidance, the convective guidance. They identify areas of the country where severe weather can occur, and their near-term forecasts have been the ones that have been the most looked at over the last several years. Just yesterday, they issued a 4 to 8 day outlook. Mm-hmm. That was experimental in prior years. Now they're going with this long-range outlook on severe weather, which I think is fascinating. And they are talking about the Tornado Alley, that area in the country which typically does encounter the strongest storms and tornadoes of the corridor from north central Texas right into Kansas and Nebraska. That's going to be a pretty active area, and some of those thunderstorm cells, at some point they managed to drift into Missouri. I think that, to go along with this warmer pattern, you're going to have a byproduct, a nasty byproduct, and that is outbreaks of storms. So that's one other thing, or one other aspect we're going to be keeping an eye on the next few days. But you're definitely right. Temperatures will be trending higher heading into the weekend. It might tail off a bit. It might be a little bit lower early next week just because of the clouds and storms. But it certainly will be more summer-like here in the coming days.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because I'm very self-serving, so I know that the pool hasn't been open yet. It seems like last year I already had the pool open, it was warm enough, and we just haven't had the opportunity. I got the pool shock, went and bought it, and I just am waiting for the word that it's going to stay warm so I can get this thing open and finally done with. It keeps pushing back and back and back. We already saw some tornadoes in the southern part of the state in Oklahoma just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
A lot of them reported. I mean, a lot of different spotted ones. Is it worse to gradually raise the temperature, or is it worse to shotgun right to 86 after you've had a bunch of days in like the 60s?
Well, remember that surface temperatures, that's just one part or one ingredient that causes severe weather. I think whether it's 72, 76, 86, that that plays some role in it. But let's not forget, too, that over the next 3 to 5 days, there will be a massive low-pressure trough emerging in the western states. So, for example, they're going to get some unusually heavy rainfall in parts of the west. In California, you know, this is the time of year where usually the storms or the rainy season comes to an end. But nonetheless, in Northern California and in parts of the Northwest, they're going to see a considerable amount of rain the next few days. That large trough of low pressure carved out over the west is going to have cold air associated with it. As that trough migrates into the Rockies, well, now cold air and also you mentioned a shotgun. You mentioned temperatures skyrocketing into the 80s. One of the other ingredients which creates severe weather, some dry air, mid-levels, dry air punching in from the west, that's going to be sweeping in off the Rockies and helping fuel a lot of these strong storms. So the answer to that is don't necessarily look so much at the surface temperature variation. Look at what's going on upstream. Look at what's going on in the western third of the country and in the Rockies. The setup we're seeing evolving over the next 3 to 5 days is one that's going to cause continuous thunderstorm development. So
if you were in the band the Mezzofronts, would you be lead singer, bassist, drummer? Where would you be?
Oh, I guess I'd have to be a lead vocalist because of how much talking I do.
Yeah. All right. So you can handle that. Carl Babinski, meteorologist with AccuWeather. Hey, thanks for coming on when we had the severe thunderstorm warning and letting us know what to expect. Thank you.
Yep. And I want to let you know one more thing. Just as we were talking, the warning for East Central Franklin County has been discontinued. So the storms obviously are on the move. And now there are three portions of three counties mentioned. One of them has been dropped.
Is there a threat that we're going to see another one pop up or anything between now and the morning?
I would certainly be looking out for that, yeah, over the next couple of hours.
Okay, we'll keep an eye out. Hey, Carl Babinski, thank you so much for joining us.
Yep.
That is meteorologist Carl Babinski from AccuWeather popping on live with us here in St. Louis, Missouri. One of the great advantages of having live local radio programming, it's 12:43 in the morning, and we have the option to pop on over to our friends over at AccuWeather, and Carl Babinski's there ready to make sure everyone in this area that may be experiencing some of these storms are able to know what's going on. So that's what you see, reports of nickel-sized hail, Eureka High Ridge, and it's still moving towards that Arnold area right now. Severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect until 1 a.m. for northwestern Jefferson in southwestern St. Louis counties. As you heard Carl mention, East Central Franklin has now been expired. So if there's any updates there, we'll keep you posted right here on Overnight America, KMOX.
Now it's Overnight America with Ryan Recker on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
There it is. A text message came in. We have hail in O'Fallon, Missouri. Thank you for that text message. Another one came in about a half hour ago. Wasn't the hamburger originally made for a noble in Hamburg, Germany? It's funny. So part of the interview, they mentioned that, and they said, not really. Kind of didn't really necessarily have association with that Hamburg name in Germany. It's kind of interesting, I guess. More of a urban legend. But yeah, go check out the book. It's kind of fascinating the way that we can go back and look at burgers. Hamburger Dreams is a great name, too. And we'll continue to monitor the severe thunderstorm warning that remains in effect until 1 a.m. for north central Jefferson and south central St. Louis counties. And it says at maybe about 10 minutes ago, the thunderstorm was over Murphy, and we were watching it, too. So went past Eureka. It was heading towards Arnold last I saw it, and it's probably close to it, or if not there right now, if you were to look at the radar. And yeah, it's going to move out of our area. There's still going to be some threats if we find ourselves here with another threat through the overnight. We'll let you know. And of course, we'll get you on with AccuWeather. We'll be able to go from there. I mentioned to him, normally when I have a meteorologist on, I can talk to him about things that are very self-serving to me. For example, I want to know when I can open my pool or when I need to put fertilizer down on the lawn. You want to know why? Because I'm just like every other guy that is a homeowner and has these things they need to worry about. When we were looking for homes in St. Louis, I said, honey, I don't want to get a house with a pool. I don't want to maintain it. I don't want it. I just don't want it. What do we end up doing? Getting the house with the pool because she wanted it. So now I got to worry about all these things. So I went out and purchased all the pool chlorine and shock and all that stuff to get it ready to go. And I'm just waiting for that special day to open her up. And if it's going to start getting to the 80s by this weekend, it might be a good time to do it. Now, if you have a pool in your house, please don't tell me this is you. USA Today, they put this article out. How many Americans do you think use a swimming pool as an alternative to showering. I don't know how you could go to a public pool without having this in the back of your mind, because it is so gross even thinking about it. According to a new survey by the Water Quality and Health Council, 51% of Americans reported using a swimming pool as a communal bathtub. Ew. Ew. So gross. Ugh. So they say dirt, sweat, personal care products, other things, our bodies react to that chlorine. And it's able to kill germs. But the problem is, if everyone else is jumping in it and depending on that chlorine to kill their germs, guess what's happening? You don't have enough chlorine to go around. So it's not always killing it. And essentially, you're making it so that water quality dips, and you're also making it so the ability for the water to stay clean diminishes. So eventually you can either have to put more chlorine in, or you just have to adjust for it after the fact. It's so dirty. It says rinsing off for just 1 minute removes most dirt, sweat, or anything else in the body. Using the pool as an alternative to showering or rinsing off and engaging after exercise or yard work. It says 64% of Americans know pool chemicals don't eliminate the need to shower, but they do it anyway. So gross. So gross. You know, one of the nice things about having a pool at your house is you don't have to worry about these things in the back of your mind. Like, you want to go to a communal pool or the community center or whatever's close to you. And you go in there and you think, oh, I just hope everything's nice and dandy in there. And then you look around and you're like, okay, that's a potential for someone that may be going to the bathroom right now. Oh, there's a potential for someone that did shower. You ever see those pictures pop up online where people do disgusting things at public pools? Like, I saw one lady shaving her legs in the pool. It's so gross. Why do people do that? You're not going to find, I don't like swimming in general, but you're not going to find me in a public pool. I just can't do it. Just can't do it. They interviewed over 3,000 people for this, so it's not just a small group. 40% of Americans admitted they had gone to the bathroom in the pool as an adult. As an adult, not a child, an adult. 40%! They also say 24% of Americans would go in a pool within 1 hour of having diarrhea, and 48% said they never shower before swimming. Most people did not know the pool chemistry can be impacted by personal care items such as makeup or deodorant. This is so gross. I hate pools so much. I think about these things, and thank goodness we have a pool. Now my kid, if he wanted to go and try to actually, if he actually wanted to go out there and try to like go swimming all the time and we didn't have a pool, I'd be saying to him, man, you're going to be building up your immune system, the things that are out there. Keep your mouth closed, kid. Oh, it's so gross. So gross. Maybe I'll bring that up to Drex. I don't know. I guess I could. We're going to be hooking up with our friend up in Canada. His name is Drex, and he does the late shift. And we do this on Tuesday nights into Wednesday morning. Maybe we'll talk to him about that. I wanted to talk to him about Tim Conway passing away. Came from Australia, moved to Canada, and now he's doing a show nationally syndicated in Canada, which is really neat, through the Chorus Radio Network. Some great radio stations up there. And I'm fascinated by what kind of pop culture here from America leaked over to Australia. I said, did you even know who Tim Conway was? And he's like, yeah, I knew who Tim Conway was. I didn't know what level of celebrity would be necessary in order for you to know who you were in Australia. I wonder what his pool etiquette is too. Yeah, I'm going to have to open this up. All I know is I was counting my lucky stars. I bought this cheap pool tarp in order to close the pool off last year. And I kept thinking to myself, what if this cheap tarp rips and everything on top, all the dirty stuff, gets into it? Ugh, can't do it. Can't do it. So now I'm thinking to myself, well, is that the worst thing that could be leaking in my pool? Like, if I got a little bit of rainwater that's been sitting on top of some leaves, what's worse, that? Or, you know, grown adults going to the bathroom inside of this body of water. It just makes me so sick. Oh, Doug texting in, and you can too, at 314-436-7900. I don't even want you to admit if you've done this. Keeping an eye on the storms too. It's right over Arnold still, and it's heading out in the area. So it looks like Columbia is about to get hit. Afton's kind of on the tail end of it. Arnold's kind of on the tail of the heavy stuff. Looks like High Ridge is clear. Eureka's about clear now. And if any of that changes, the severe thunderstorm warning still remains in effect for another 5 minutes or so. The National Weather Service hasn't actually taken this off the table. Oh, hold on now. There's an update. Severe thunderstorm warning for north central Jefferson and south central St. Louis continues and will expire at 1 a.m. So it looks like it's not going to be extended. That's good news. So that's only good for another about 4.5 minutes. The storm has weakened below severe limits. Therefore, the warning will be allowed to expire. Thanks to the National Weather Service for doing that. Doug in Chesterfield texted in and said, just wanted to ask you if Dave King is still doing the announcing for the station ID. So we got a new voice guy, but Dave King is still going to do all the sports imaging. So yes, Dave's still here, but he's doing all the sports stuff. We have a different voice to do the regular radio station stuff. So pay attention when we play the commercials here, getting close to the CBS News at the top of the hour. Right before that, we play a thing called a legal ID, which is essentially our legal identification. We identify our radio station on this frequency, 1120 AM. When you hear it, there's going to be a new voice. Oh, yeah. We're refreshing some things on the radio station. And if you listen to Camo X throughout the day, you're going to be able to hear more of that. So you're going to have a keen ear. The Doug over in Chesterfield, a very keen ear on him picking up on that. I like that he said a voice guy. Yeah, that's technical radio talk there. All right, our friends up in Canada, Drex, on their way, connecting the United States and Canada. Next on Overnight America, KMOX.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.